move on to the last case of it's still morning of United States versus Schmelsky. And we have Mr. Tassif.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is George Tassif. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office in Peoria, Illinois. I'm here today on behalf of the defendant, Kevin Schmelsky. This case arises out of proceedings in the district court below, where both the guilty plea and the sentencing hearing occurred pre-Blakely. So all of the revolutionary, if you will, events that have occurred since July 24th, that is, of this year, when the Supreme Court handed down the Blakely decision, were completely unknown to us as we were litigating this case.
Let me pause. I understand your position. Remember, we've read the briefs in this and are certainly familiar with the mishmash being contained in this. But if I read the colloquy at the sentencing proceeding, every issue that was used for the sentencing was admitted by the defendant. Am I correct?
Almost.
Okay.
Almost.
What did I miss?
With one critical exception.
Lay it on me.
The exception is a finding contained in paragraph 59 of the PSR, and which is the basis of the government's argument for the five-level adjustment, that Mr. Schmelsky engaged in a pattern of activity involving prohibited sexual conduct, that is, sexually assaulting three minors on more than two occasions. There is nothing within the transcript of the plea colloquy that says anything about a sexual assault. All it states is that there was child pornography
and
conducted with the three minor children, stepchildren. First paragraph. This is on paragraph pages 18 through 20, the change of plea transcript. And both parties have reproduced the plea colloquy in their respective briefs. There is nothing within this Rule 11 plea that admits sexual assault. There is nothing whatsoever in the record below.
What did it say as to his relationship with the three stepchildren?
Well, with respect to the Rule 11 recitation of the factual
basis. The government stated that he took pornographic pictures of himself and of his stepdaughters while they were engaged, and sometimes to take pornographic image of him with another stepdaughter while engaging in a sexually explicit conduct.
Well, the statement at the plea was at the time of their ages were 12, 14, and 15
right.
years of age. Sometimes the defendant would take the pornographic images himself of his stepdaughters engaging in explicit sexual conduct.
Right.
Now, explicit sexual conduct is the code word for child pornography. It's important to know.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is, Judge.
It also has a very explicit connotation that has nothing to do with it.
Explicit sexual conduct is then referenced in the child pornography
right.
statute.
But how about this? Let me finish it up. While engaging in especially explicit conduct, what is that, just taking pictures?
Yes.
So somebody is taking pictures of him while engaging in taking pictures?
Sometimes he would take the pornographic images himself of his stepdaughters,
right.
stepdaughters engaging. And sometimes he would cause one of his stepdaughters to take pornographic images
of him with another stepdaughter,
while engaging
in sexually explicit conduct. While he's taking pictures? Come on.
Now, isn't the issue the under 12, or whether she's under 12 or not?
That's one of the issues.
Well, I thought that was the only one.
No, there are a panoply of enhancements under the guidelines that had added additional points, but the one that we are most concerned
and
with...
And the one you're most concerned with, did you file written objections to this one paragraph 59?
Oh, yes. Well, I filed a written objection that it constituted double counting.
Double counting, but in terms of the factual finding in the PSIR. Was that objected to, that specific factual finding? I understand the double counting.
I did not specifically argue
that there was no factual
basis for the sexual assault. We were arguing that the offense conduct was the same as that which amounts to the offense of conviction and therefore is a double count.
Right. I understand double count, but that's a distinction. A double count is different from whether or not he's admitting the facts there of the sexual assault. And what you're saying is you did not contest or object to the finding or the conclusion in the PSR that there was a sexual assault. Your objection dealt with double counting.
Based upon the pornographic images being produced by Mr. Schmelsky.
Right, as it double counts, but the bottom line, the underlying factual statement was not contested.
And conceded, Your Honor, we did not go forward in this pre-Blakely argument at sentencing in April of this year and affirmatively state there is no basis for any claim.
Because but what I'm saying, Blakely,
he was convicted of sexually assaulting one of his daughters.
You're right, but what I'm saying is Blakely doesn't have anything to do with the factual basis for the PSR. Before Blakely, if there were facts in the PSR that you contested, that you thought were incorrect, you had an absolute right in the sentencing guideline scheme of things to contest that that is correct and to demand that the government put on a hearing or do whatever.
Well, and I understood. But what Blakely applies now is that the finding of the court that there was a sexual assault of the three minor daughters is a finding never admitted by Mr. Schmelsky or proven by a jury, by proof beyond a reasonable doubt. So therefore, we've got a pure Blakely-Booker issue dealing with the factual basis that the court relied upon for assessing a five-level adjustment under 4B1.5. And this is why I will ask the court at this juncture for 10 days leave following the issuance of the Booker Fan-Fan decision to file a supplemental memo on this. I know of no case, and nor has the government cited any in their brief, that acknowledging at a change of plea that the government's recitation of facts is substantially correct is ipso facto an admission, a binding admission as to all such recitations
But you never backed off and you didn't say they're substantially true except for this, this, and this. He basically admitted the conduct and said and when the government gave the summary, it was substantially true. And then you didn't like distinguish and say, but here's where we vary or we disagree with the government. That's not in the record.
Okay. But then further, if those then become admissions that would foreclose a Blakely argument, there is no finding and no factual basis for sexual assault of three minor stepchildren. That factor was found by the court for imposing the five-level adjustment, and this is all pre-Blakely. So Booker and Fan-Fan will speak to this very issue because they can't argue as they're trying to, or as we argued in the district court. Clearly, production of child pornography involving two or more victims, gave rise to the multiple count adjustment of the guidelines, 2G1.2. That's when he gets his extra 3 points. Then, if there is a pattern of prohibited sexual conduct, it becomes an extra 5. They can't argue that production of child pornography allows for the 3-level multiple count adjustment and the pattern of prohibited sexual conduct because that would clearly be a double count. So the government is trying to escape from the double count prohibition by saying, well, there was sexual assault involving two or more children. And that factor was never found by a jury nor admitted by the defendant.
Mm.
And for that reason, there is a Blakely error that this court in Olinger ought to reverse, vacate the sentence, and remand for a new sentencing hearing. Hmm. And that is why the Supreme Court's decision is going to be so instrumental, so important to this particular appeal, because clearly the government is relying upon the finding made in the probation report, paragraph 59. Two paragraphs that are critical importance, paragraph 19 and paragraphs 59 of the PSR. Those are the two factual findings. One of which we agreed and said, well, he produced child pornography of three stepdaughters. Okay? That gives us the 3-point multiple count adjustment. But then they piggyback on top of that the pattern of prohibited sexual activity. That's where we say it's a double count, an additional adjustment based upon the same offense conduct, and clearly now in the wake of Blakely, it's a Blakely error because it's premised upon a factual matter that was never found by a jury nor stipulated to by the defendant. For those reasons, we ask that the sentence in this case be vacated and remanded to the district court for resentencing.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Keith?
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Tom Keith, and I am an assistant United States attorney for the Central District of Illinois. The first argument I'd like to pose to the court is that there is no plain error here. And still today, and even in the brief, there is no dispute of fact. There was no judicial determination as to an issue of fact. And as it says in Booker, that facts must be found by a jury if it's going to enhance the sentence. That's true unless those facts are, as I said, found by a jury, admitted to, or, as it said in Booker, in this case, applying to Booker, were not in dispute. And there was no dispute. There was no factual finding by the judge in this case.
Is there any charge that's contingent on somebody being under 12?
No. And that goes to the issue of the enhancement for the count 3, possession of child pornography. For the enhancements, and I would claim that if there is a dispute there, it's harmless because that particular enhancement for count 3, in count 3, he only received 60 months imprisonment. And it's true that there's no facts in the record. The facts say that the girls at the time he produced the child pornography itself was 12, 14, and 15. But count 1 is what's driving the sentence in this case. And that was where he received the 213-month sentence. And there was only 4 enhancements as it applied to count 1. And that was the enhancement that the children were between ages 12 and 16. He received an enhancement there. Enhancement because he was the legal guardian. He received an enhancement for that, for count 1. An enhancement because there were 3 victims, the 3 stepdaughters. And then the one in dispute here today, the enhancement that he engaged in prohibited sexual conduct with those 3 daughters.
Right, and in terms of the double count, the last two that you mentioned, one was based on the number of victims and the other was the pattern of activity, and those are distinguishable.
They are 2 different conducts, Your Honor, and 2 different harms. I cited the Wright case, but there's other cases out there. In the Wright case, there was a bank robbery, and in the course of the bank robbery, he kidnapped someone, got enhancement. In the course of the bank robbery, he caused a policeman to shoot, which endangered lives. He received enhancements based on certain other conduct. In our case, he received the enhancement for the 3 victims under 2G2.1C because of the number of victims. That's correct. For the enhancement under 4B1.5, that's because he engaged in a prohibited pattern of conduct or a pattern of conduct of prohibited sexual conduct with the children. That's what that enhancement's for. One affects what the defendant did. The defendant himself could receive an enhancement under 2G2.1C without ever getting an enhancement under the 2B1.5 because it involves two different types of conduct.
I do hope the Supreme Court writes out those entire the sentencing guidelines just to keep from sitting around talking about A1, 2, and 7, 4, 3. It sounds like a mathematics course and stupid.
I would add this, too. If when we look at the application notes to that 4B1.5, the pattern of conduct in this case, it presupposes that it was in the course of producing the child pornography. Application note 4B2 says, an occasion of prohibited sexual conduct may be considered for purpose of subsection B without regard to whether the occasion occurred during the course of the instant offense. So what counsel's arguing here is because he produced child pornography and he's saying it necessarily involves sex with the minors, it's not double counting because even if he engages in that conduct himself with 2 minors, at least 2 minors, on at least 2 separate occasions, then that brings in the application of that guideline without regard to the production of the child pornography.
Let me ask you this. The defendant didn't agree to any facts supporting the enhancement for images of a child under 12, right? He did not agree.
He did. There are no facts in this record that would support that you're right. What I said when I gave the factual basis that he agreed mm-hmm. to was that at the time the pitchers were produced, they were 12, 14, and 15. So that is correct.
All right. And then your position would be that someone admitting something is substantially true is the same as admitting that it is true?
I would say this. Going through the plea colloquy in a case like this, under oath before the judge, is just not a formal act. What he says and what he admits to and what he agrees to has a legal effect. And when a defendant gets up and gives the plea colloquy, and if he minimizes or if he isn't factually accurate, and the government is asked to show what the facts would show if the case were to go to trial, and if he says it's substantially true, then he's agreeing to those facts. If we're more specific and he says, yep, that's substantially true, then yes, it has a legal effect. That's what we're saying, that it has a legal effect. He can't just sit there and listen to us and not say, no, that's not. He has to say that. And that's our position.
So your position would be that if he says substantially true and he wants to qualify that, he should have to spell out the qualifiers.
Yes. If he has a disagreement with what we say, then he should have to spell it out. Otherwise, our factual basis means nothing to the court. We tell the court what we believe the facts will show if the case were to go to trial and prove to the jury beyond a reasonable doubt. And we usually preface that with, if this case were to go to trial, the government would show beyond a reasonable doubt that. And then the judge will say, is that substantially true? And if he says yes, then yes, it has legal effect. That's our position. And with respect to Your Honors, I would suggest
certainly it would be cleaner if the court just said, is it true? I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry. I interrupted.
No, I was just going to say, I would submit, too, that the dates are crucial here. This started on Christmas Day 2001 on the allegations and our factual basis that we gave and extended clear till June 9th of 2002. And we said in there, sometimes he would cause one of his stepdaughters to take the pornographic images of him with another stepdaughter while engaging in sexually explicit conduct over a period of time. And we said here on numerous occasions. Now, we're not just saying that he caused another daughter to take pictures. We're saying here that to take pornographic pictures of him with one of his stepdaughters. I submit that that's enough factual basis to support the pattern of prohibited sexual conduct with the daughters. We're hearing sexual assault, but the language is prohibited sexual conduct. And we submit that the facts are in the record to support that. If the court has any questions. Thank you.
Okay, you got 30 seconds.
I'll make it a minute.
Okay, a minute.
Well, paragraph 59 of the PSR clearly says he engaged in a pattern of prohibited sexual conduct, i.e., sexual assault of three minors on more than two occasions. And again, as is often the case under the guidelines, we show up to plead guilty to a production of child pornography case and end up having matters thrown at us at a sentencing hearing with a guideline provision, 4B1.5, that has never been interpreted by any court in this country on these specific facts, on these kinds of particular context. Closest case I could find is U.S. versus Rice, 358 F3rd 1268. It's cited in our brief. This is a Tenth Circuit case transporting child pornography across state lines. Sexual exploitation of the minor was found to cross-reference a higher guideline and then upwardly depart for inadequate criminal history. Tenth Circuit said that's double counting, just as we have in this instance. This court ought to vacate the sentence and remand for resentencing. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. This case will be taken under advisement, and that completes the arguments for today. The court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
Right.